the money to reconstruct Syria, you're not going to be able to send those refugees back, and we'll dump more on Europe.
Hi, I'm Stan Raven. I used to be from somewhere else, but I'm not there anymore. And you are listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Yep, you're listening to WGXC 90.7. And when I'm coming home from the turnip picking, I like to listen to the Battlefield Earth program. Boy, that guy's got some sensibility about him, doesn't he? Every Tuesday nights at 9:30. It's crazy out there.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
It's stick together. Come on, come on, it's stick together. You know we made a vow to live one another forever.
All Together Now listens for feedback from the public. Anyone who wants to leave a public comment can call 518-291-9492 and leave an audio message up to 3 minutes with any sort of opinion about something you heard on All Together Now. You can also send emails to info@wgxc.org with opinions about what you hear here.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, August 20th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Chris Christie predicts President Donald Trump will regret not exerting executive privilege in the Mueller probe. Also on the Monday rundown, investment funds look for women in leadership, and the Two-Spirit Gathering celebrates Montana's LGBTQ Native Americans, and more. First, topping our news, The Hill reports former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie predicts President Trump will regret not invoking executive or attorney-client privilege in special counsel Robert Mueller's probe into any ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. You never waive that, absolutely not, Christie said on ABC's This Week.
He added, this shows what a C-level legal team the president had in Ty Cobb and John Dowd. The Hill reports Christie also said the decision to waive privilege resulted in Don McGahn's cooperation with the investigation. He adds, it put McGahn in an impossible situation. Because once you waive that privilege and turn over all those documents, McGahn has no choice but to go on and answer everything, every question they ask. A federal appeals court in Boston's ordering a review of a Bureau of Immigration Appeals ruling that denied a rehearing to a man seeking asylum.
Indra Sihotang is one of hundreds who have fled anti-Christian oppression in Indonesia. He's been allowed to stay in the U.S. for well over a decade, but last September, at his regular check-in with immigration officials, he was detained without warning and threatened with deportation. Volunteer lawyers rallied to ask the Federal Court of Appeals to intervene. Andrea Kramer, who handled the case in the appeals court, says it is extremely rare for a federal court to order a review of an immigration ruling.
This case was significant because the Board of Immigration Appeals, the BIA, really had given short shrift, as the court said. It didn't really consider the record.
Christians in Indonesia have been attacked and murdered, but the Trump administration argued that general conditions don't prove that the persecution or torture of individuals who fled would be immediate or likely if they returned. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Andrea tells us while the persecution of Christians in Indonesia has fluctuated, conditions have seriously deteriorated in the past few years. Portland's become a hot spot for far-right rallies that often turn violent. Could more be done if the groups holding these rallies were thought of as gangs? Two criminologists believe so, and they say groups like the Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer, which organized a rally in Portland earlier this month, exhibit the same characteristics as other street gangs. However, Sharon Reed at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte says the gang problem stereotypically is associated with black and brown youth.
Now we have this group of white youth who are doing sort of these same things that we're concerned about, being involved in violence. A lot of the ones that have been interviewed, also drugs and drug sales and all these other street crimes, but they are somehow different, and race plays a huge role in that.
Reed says groups like the Proud Boys identify themselves like other gangs by wearing certain clothing brands and have an initiation process. They and other so-called alt-right groups also have a public presence, often intimidating local communities. And while the growing number of women running for political office is getting lots of attention, Stephanie Carson tells us there's also a push in the financial sector to increase female leadership on Wall Street.
American women control more than half the personal wealth in the country, but comprise only 9% of executive leadership, according to Catalyst, a global nonprofit advocating for women in the workplace. Gender inequality is prompting some investment firms to seek out funds that prioritize female leadership in the companies they include. Betsy Mosetter offers a gender lens portfolio at her firm, Green Alpha.
It's been proven time and time again that the more diverse your team is, the more innovations will come out of that group, the higher they execute on their goals, the better they are at problem solving, the better they are at identifying problems.
Mosetter refers to what is known as gender lens investing as a growing sector among firms around the country.
Meantime, the economic benefits of New Mexico's national parks to local communities may be enormous, but Ross Brown reports it is also threatened due to a lack of maintenance, a problem Congress has an opportunity to fix.
Bipartisan legislation now under consideration would provide funding to address the nation's $12 billion maintenance backlog. Los Alamos County Councilor Susan O'Leary says New Mexico's parks provide not only jobs, but economic benefits to gateway communities.
New Mexico is a state that is very dependent on tourism as an economic driver. But if the Park Service is not funded to maintain its basic infrastructure, then this is a lost opportunity.
New Mexico park sites are estimated to have $123 million in deferred repairs.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. And finally, Eric Tegenoff tells us the Montana Two-Spirit Society, a Native American organization formed by LGBT groups, is holding its 23rd annual gathering this week at Flathead Lake.
The term Two-Spirit doesn't simply describe LGBT Native Americans, however. Members of the group say it goes beyond sexuality and gender identity. Founder of the society, Stephen Barrios, says Two-Spirit defines a role in tribes that existed across North America before Europeans arrived.
We don't consider ourselves gay, because with that term, Two-Spirit, comes a lot of responsibility. We give back to our communities. We take care of our elders, our youth. We had roles in our community that carried responsibilities with that name.
Barrios says colonization took away the traditional role of Two Spirits, but groups like his are reclaiming it.
Indigenous people from tribes across the country, as well as Canada, Mexico, the Philippines, and Laos, will be in attendance. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, News and Cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Monday, the high near 76 and a low around 56. Tuesday, there's a 30% chance of showers after 2 p.m., with clouds increasing during the day and a high near 72. Tuesday night, prediction is for a 90% chance of rain, possibly thunderstorms, a low around 65. Wednesday, there's a 50% chance of rain with cloudy skies and a high near 76, low around 54. And Thursday should be sunny with a high near 72. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio. Here is the week in Congressman John Faso news. Votes he took, positions he espoused, and protest rallies and town halls that he attended or not.
According to the website 538.com, Representative Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 90% of the time.
Madison Isler and Eric Anderson are reporting in the Times Union. U.S. Representative John Faso is one of three upstate members of Congress asking Amtrak to reconsider its decision to stop operating the Toys for Tots train, which distributes winter clothes, toys, and other items to upstate families every year. In an August 9th letter to Amtrak President and CEO Richard Anderson, Faso, U.S. Representatives Elise Stefanik and Paul Tonko said the train is, and I quote, a beloved and enduring resource that many of our region's neediest families rely on. Discontinuing this train service will mean approximately 40,000 children and their families will not benefit from donated gifts and much-needed winter hats and gloves, end quote. They wrote further, and I quote, we implore you to reconsider, end quote. This year would have been the 20th anniversary of the Marines Toys for Tots campaign. The train almost did not operate in 2017, but a last-minute intervention from Stefanik and Tonko helped to save the service. However, in a statement issued last week, the company said, and I quote, Amtrak's objective is to operate its core scheduled train service safely, on time, and efficiently, and must therefore decline to operate this charter. Amtrak will continue to proudly support the Toys for Tots program through the collection of toys at participating stations. End quote. Read the full story in the Times Union. Convoluted national politics have taken over the local congressional race this week between Representative John Faso and Antonio Delgado. The Republican attacked Delgado August 13th in a press release that name-checked Hillary Clinton. Faso's campaign criticized efforts to throw out petition signatures for independent candidates seeking to run against Faso and Delgado in November. A Times Union story says a close associate of Delgado, who has contributed to Delgado's campaign, Rima Liscom, challenged the petitions. Faso's campaign manager, Tom Szymanski, said in a press release, and I quote, make no mistake, Antonio Delgado, Nancy Pelosi, or whoever is paying these high-priced lawyers to subvert democracy in the 19th District are nervous. Antonio Delgado's candidacy is flawed, and they know he can't win the race on his own merits, end quote. So far, Faso's campaign is not announcing local appearances and has focused on attacking Delgado. The Democrat Delgado, meanwhile, has called on the Kinderhook Republican to return $3,000 he received from Representative Chris Collins, a Western New York Republican who was arrested by the FBI last week. Delgado campaign manager Allison Marcus said, and I quote, John Faso has consistently favored big corporations and special interests over the needs and concerns of his own constituents. He has taken thousands from dishonest representatives and Washington insiders. Faso should return the $3,000 from Collins immediately in order to finally demonstrate to the people of our district that he won't benefit from corrupt politicians, end quote. Faso did not comment on the contribution from Collins. New York League of Conservation Voters Education Fund is reporting the major party candidates in the 19th congressional district race will face off in a forum focused on environmental issues August 29th. First-term Congressman John Faso, a Republican from Kinderhook, and challenger Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck, will participate in the event sponsored by the League, the Friends of the Upper Delaware River, the Coalition for the Delaware River Watershed, and the Delaware Highlands Conservancy. The forum will focus on efforts at the federal, local, and state levels to protect the Delaware River watershed. According to the League, the watershed provides drinking water to 15 million people and is responsible for 600,000 jobs and $22 billion in annual economic activity. The event will be held in the Western...
Aiden O'Connor, welcome.
Hello there. Thank you so much, very much for having me on again. Perfect timing. Perfect timing.
Yeah. Sorry, Aiden was just a little bit late to the party. Aiden, the Greene County Legislature has been taking this issue up for some time.
Yeah, it's significant. We started our first term January 1st, 2016. And since January, that first month of the term, we've been talking about it ever since.
Your thoughts?
Thoughts are, I could give you an update real quick. So September is supposed to be when they reissue the resolution or the bond to come before public safety and then through the entire legislature. I have seen no update since then. This month of August during public safety, we did have quite a bit of conversation about it. And a lot of the questions that we had that we thought would be fulfilled in the next 60 days, you know, posting of the frequently asked questions, getting a set price. How much is this going to cost taxpayers? What is the number of beds? How exactly is the equation to pay for it? So, you know, a lot of people right now are speculating. And what we're really looking for is within this 60 days, which is now down to pretty much 30 days, is let's get the facts out there. And let's make sure that if we make a decision, we do it through facts and not just the 14 of us as legislators know it, but the general public knows it. We're putting it on the website. We're putting it on social media. We're giving it to the newspapers. So that's where we are today.
So what else could be done? I mean, this $39 million is an awful lot of money. Although I do believe that in Columbia County, we're spending $14 million on a roundabout to connect to the bridge. Uh-huh. So maybe the jail isn't such a bad deal. But $38 million seems like a significant amount of money. And to me, that there seems to be an opportunity cost here to enrich Greene County as opposed to, you know, creating a facility. Jails are necessary. We have laws. People break them.
Of course.
We have to, you know, we have to have a place to hold these people.
Mm-hmm.
But $1.2 million per year over 30 years versus bonding for $39 million. Yeah, obviously jobs are going to be created. You know, there seems to be some opportunity to do workforce development programs, infrastructure development that is not a prison. You know, I'm sure that there are people in Coxsackie who would love for their real estate value not to be lowered uh-huh. by the presence of a jail.
Mm-hmm. Another jail.
another jail.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you there. As far as I feel like the rehabilitation part is, I know that's like important to you as far as most of the people there are drug addicts. What good is it doing to us as a community, and what good is it doing to them as a member of our community to lock them up over and over again? Absolutely. And that's where the big conversation is. There's really two conversations going on. Part A being the bricks and mortar of it. You know, how many rooms, what's the infrastructure required, where is it most likely the best it could be? So if it's in Coxsackie, is it more travel, what's the travel time, et cetera? And then part B is really that, you know, alternatives to incarceration will deem it that. But that has a vast majority of options for both proactive, reactive, and certainly I chair the Health Services Committee in the Greene County Legislature, and, you know, addiction being at the forefront of everything. Mm-hmm. This plays directly into this, whether it's addiction to opioids and heroin, whether it's addiction to other drugs, whether it's just drinking and driving. You know, we combine those and say, what can we be doing more proactively? And then when the time comes, you know, how do we help the judicial system and the legislative system make sure that these individuals are getting help and truly, you know, like we talk about correctionals and things like that, it's to correct their nature, correct what's going on, and to be able to bring them back to society. So there's definitely two parts. You know, you mentioned $39 million. Right now, we don't even know what the resolution truly will be. I know they're able to lower it down to $47 million, and there's different ways to pay for it. So, you know, whether we pay for it per year bonding, whether we project that we're going to have a few $100,000 or millions of dollars saved up over time, what it comes down to is you'll hear people say between your increase will be between $30 and $50 per $100,000, $150,000 assessed value. I just caution people on that because it might sound like a small number relatively when they put it in that context, but that's for one single item of your taxes going up. So, you know, that doesn't include the other county tax increase that might occur,
exactly,
the town increase that'll occur, the school tax that'll occur, and whether or not you have, you know, water, lighting districts, things like that, fire districts that see an increase too. So we're collectively saying that, you know, $30, $50 plus all those other things. And that doesn't, you know, the legislative term ends this year for 14 people. You know, a lot of them are up for re-election, a lot of them are not. Next term is a three-year term that is going to be very significant for Greene County residents. Not just do I believe the jail, but we are seeing organic increases of our budget go up by 8, 10, 12, 14%. And that's without adding no new services, no new employees, no new capital projects. So that's with your insurance, that's with retirement, all the natural costs of government that go along with that. In addition, we have a mental health building in Caro, which needs massive amount of either repair or to find a new building itself. We have a records building that needs significant upkeep or repair or replacement. And we need to digitize our records, which when we looked at how much that would cost, you're talking in the hundreds of thousands and overall millions project. So, you know, if you look at all of this from a distance and say, wow, what are we prioritizing and where are we getting the money from? We've got to slow it down and sit down and find a long-term solution, not these short-term one resolution at a time solutions.
A couple of quick questions. Is there a cultural resistance in Greene County to cost sharing?
I would never say it's just Greene County. I would say,
right. I mean, yeah. Certainly there's an element of that everywhere.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, people are like, yeah, no, we want our own prison. We don't want somebody else's prison.
And that's the hardest part. And I empathize. You know, I have people that have come to my house and literally said, Aiden, I just think that we should have our own jail here. And it's because they've seen the community college. They've seen the hospital all leave. And they have that, you know, they've lived here for generations. They have that kind of buy-in, that ownership that they feel. But at the same time, you open up the conversation of, what if we had new things, things that we didn't have before that could benefit our lives, improve the services, decrease our taxes? And, you know, I always go back to the countywide EMS. It's scary. It's terrifying to see change. Even if you could say it's going to save taxpayers money, improve services, you know, somebody will say to me, Aiden, my grandfather worked there for, you know, three generations ago. My grandmother participated in some sort of recreational program two generations ago. So they have a lot of buy-in, and that's very hard to be able to go out and touch 49,000 people in Greene County and explain to them, you know, here's the facts and here's the emotion. And we empathize with the emotion, but look at what it could be. And if we don't change something soon, you know, with the tax increases that we have, the lack of services that we have, the aging population we have, we're not setting ourselves up for a good 5 to 10 years from now.
I guess the question then becomes, you know, is there a vision for what it could be? Is there something, you know, I just spoke about opportunity cost. Is there something to say, hey, yes, the prison is going away, but look at what you get instead, not $50 extra, you know, from your property taxes, but a thing, like something you can hold in touch.
No, and I think that's a hard part because it goes back to the brick and mortar. If we don't have something that's actually tangible, like cinder block and cement, people can't potentially see that. So
right.
It's hard to explain to them, you know, we're going to initiate these 10 programs to try to better people's lives, get them back into our communities, get them back into our families. But then you have to really understand the philosophy behind that because it's not something you could see and touch and feel.
Right, right. And that's a problem with a lot of infrastructure improvements, you know, with Hudson's DRI. You know, there's a lot of streetscaping that's going on.
Right.
Nobody cares about streetscaping, but it's an absolute necessity, you know. But it's not something that you can really point to and say, "Look at that, a smooth
exactly." Or understand that a lot of things that we're doing, and you know, the traffic circle being one, you know, that everyone contributed to a little bit, they're all seeds that are going to a longer term strategy. So,
right.
Like tying in the arts of Olana and the Thomas Cole House. and seeing the people that come here for tourism, economic, who might be second homeowners because they feel as though that culture is something that they want to be around and be bestowed upon. So it's all these things where you plant a seed, but how do you get that message out there? And I will say, as legislative bodies or villages or towns or cities, we do a very bad job in trying to connect with people. Because unless you're at the meeting and hear us first and foremost and hear the debates and see the discussions, it's very hard for them to understand everything that's going on. And, you know, we saw that with the latest today in the newspaper, and it's been spread all over social media, is the school resource officers. You know, topics like that become very, very emotionally driven.
Can you give us a little background on the school resource officers?
Absolutely. So this month at the August Public Safety, the Greene County Legislature has presented to them a subject of school resource officers. And the sheriff went out to school districts and said, you know, we could provide a sheriff who is specially trained as a school resource officer, and through a cost, you know, savings, cost sharing initiative, we would implement a school resource officer in the school districts that wanted them. So, for instance, Caro Durham has two schools, the elementary school and the high school, middle school. So they would have two. Windham Ashland Jewett said that they would take one, and Greenville Central School would have one. So they came up with an initiative to say, you know, X amount of money would come from the county for the non-school year functioning, and during the school function, the school boards would pay X amount of money. And so they gave us the information that night, and about 2 weeks later, we had a special public safety meeting just to discuss the three resolutions that would implement the program, essentially fund it. The sheriff puts together the operational portion of it, and we would be funding it. Unfortunately,
so this does not come out of the sheriff's budget.
It would essentially. We just have to make sure we earmark.
You're adding to the sheriff's budget.
Yeah. It'd either be added to or earmarked.
So this is not
going to
decrease services elsewhere.
No. We'd be either growing it or we'd be finding funds from somewhere else. And the other night during public safety, and I don't want to get too complex for listeners because Robert's rules and all the rules that we abide by could get very complex. But essentially, we had two people that were absent. And when you were absent, it goes for no votes. And it was already going to be close, if not overruled anyway. So all three resolutions were essentially failed in committee, meaning that tonight during our full board meeting, it will not go in front of the full legislature. It, quote unquote, died in committee. There is a way to resurrect it. If somebody who voted no wanted to, they could bring it back to the floor and ask for another vote after more discussion. So,
do you think that'll happen? What's your feeling on?
I think that night it was split. I think, you know, I was somebody who voted in favor of it. I see the school resource officer as not just a defense mechanism towards what we've seen across the country with mass shootings. But I really see it as more of a community police and a resource to individuals. So when I envision an SRO program going into the school district, it's a police officer who is literally having lunch with the students, who is getting to know the students, who's high-fiving them in the hallway and giving that perception to kids, which is so important to have in our community, that they're problem solvers more than they're looking to focus in on something that you're doing wrong. They're there to solve a problem, and they could work. We have Greene County mental health officials who are in the school also that we contract with, who could start to go down that pathway and see if there's somebody who's having emotional issues, mental health issues, addiction issues. So I see it as a well-rounded community service. But I think a lot of the legislators had two different issues. One being, what about the schools that don't utilize it, whether or not they have anything else or they're already using something else? Are they going to get a share funding of it? Are they automatically opt in, opt out? So they felt uneasy with that and within their districts. And the other thing was, I feel like some people wanted more information. So, you know, for such a large project, we only had about an hour of conversation. They were great. We had school resource officers who had worked in local school districts before come into us, explain that process of that human-to-human interaction and the change of culture it has. But also, you know, I think some legislators might have read up and said, wow, there's other options. Have we ever looked at these other options?
Is the idea to expand this program to every campus in Greene County?
It would certainly be available. So right now it's available to everyone. It was just these school districts who opted in. There are some school districts who do local police. So Coxsackie, for instance, Coxsackie Athens has a local police officer who already is a school resource officer.
Catskill has the same.
And they also have Catskill's going more with a security-based system rather than a law enforcement-based system.
Can you explain the difference?
I believe, and I don't want to speak too open on it because it wasn't part of our legislative meeting, it's a security, an armed security guard that goes through their own school resource officer type of training. So it wouldn't be law enforcement-based. Ours would be literally your deputy sheriff, who then goes for the training and is in the school.
I see. Excellent. That is very interesting. Is there a possibility that this is going to get resurrected today? Do you think is there a movement to get this conversation going again before your next board meeting?
I don't anticipate. So tonight is our full board meeting, and that's our August 2nd.
Hey, it's Cassie.
Hey, it's Shelby, and we're from Chatham.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM.
Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
Listener-supported hands-on radio.
For Greene and Columbia counties. Have a nice day.
Yay!
Fridays on WGXC are made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kurt Trumbull of Babylon, New York. Sustaining supporters like Kurt are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omi, an international center for the arts located in Ghent, New York. Art Omi, the Fields Sculpture Park, presents the works of internationally recognized contemporary modern artists and architects in an outdoor environment open dawn to dusk 365 days a year. Art Omi offers a year-round indoor gallery, calendar of public arts events, as well as international artist residencies. Art Omi believes that exposure to internationally diverse creative voices fosters tolerance and respect, raises awareness, inspires innovation, and ignites change. Information at artomi.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On Tuesday, August 14th, two candidates vying for the Democratic line in November's election to represent the 107th Assembly District met at a candidate forum hosted by Cambridge and White Creek Democratic Committees. Ty Tricia Haltling and Don Boyojin answered questions on a wide range of topics from climate change to gun control, and Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Corin Carey brings us this report.
The candidates agreed on many public policy positions, but distinguished themselves in a number of key ways. Boyajian arguing that he is uniquely situated to square off against a Republican candidate with a well-funded campaign, and Haltling emphasizing her working-class identity and ability to appeal to Republicans and independent voters. Let's take a listen to how the candidates responded to some of the questions. On the question of arts and economic development.
Communities like Cambridge and Chatham and Hudson have been creating microeconomies within their community based on arts and tourism. And it's a really wonderful way to bring tourism into your community for something that you are anyway. It's not creating something different. It's flourishing the arts that already exist in your community. They've done studies. The National Endowment for the Arts said participation in cultural activity directly correlates to an increase in civic engagement. Voting, it increases voter turnout. Volunteering, charitable work. These are all really important things. And art increases engagement by people. So historically, if you look back as far as the Renaissance, the reason they call it a Renaissance that's happening in Hudson, is that when art flourishes, the economy thrives. They are linked together. Aside from the economic benefit for communities by allowing art to flourish and thrive, art's good for your soul. It connects people to each other. It creates good humans. These are really important things, and these are things that we need right now. We need good humans. We need to make sure that we're nourishing our soul. So not only are we benefiting our economic development, we're benefiting the betterment of the people within our community. I'm a musician myself. I play in a band with my mom and my friend Doug. We are a folk singer-songwriter band. I play the guitar and the ukulele, and it makes me feel good. People who support the arts also support local businesses. So when they come to Argyle Brewing Company to watch live music, they're spending money on craft beer, local brew. They're filling their gas tanks at your gas station. They might be going out to dinner at your restaurant before they go to see the live show. So when you bring art into your community and you flourish the art and the music, you're also encouraging growth of all of your businesses. Because when people come in to Hudson, they're staying in hotels. They're spending money at restaurants. They're going to the shops during the day. In the town of Chatham, which is in Columbia County in our district, they have a main street that has flourished. Restaurants, local venues, art galleries have all flourished. And it's because they've concentrated and focused on what they have to offer, which is a lot of artists and artisans. And they've showcased those local talents, and people come from all over to see it. The Berkshires, which is 5 minutes from my hometown of New Lebanon, Tanglewood, Jacob's Pillow, people come from all over the world to attend these displays of art.
What a treat that we have two candidates that are both musicians, so we're going to have to do a jam session of all candidates at some point. And who remembers who the richest person was in the 17th century? No? You probably remember some of the best composers of the 17th century, don't you? The greatest legacy that any culture leaves behind, in my opinion, is its artistic contributions. They last the test of time. So what can be done legislatively to bolster that? Because I was just looking at the statistics. New York State, $114 billion each year on average to the state economy. It employs nearly 500,000 people in New York State to arts and arts education. Now what they've done in the past with respect to the New York Council for the Arts, a lot of it's going down in New York City. But up here, it has an even more profound effect when we invest in our arts. And I think it segues in very closely with our agritourism economy up here. We have a lot to offer, and there's some synergies of people coming up here on weekends, and they want to go tour a farm, they want to go see a show, and we got to get them to stay here and to spend their money here. So one of the most pressing legislative issues that I see is the potential regulation of Airbnb, and they are trying to ratchet down on it. It's very New York City-driven initiative. That would be so bad for our arts dollars and our agritourism dollars up here, because you can't be regulating somebody that's renting out their home through Airbnb like a hotel down in New York City. Now, the reason they're floating this until we get more upstate Dems is because we don't have enough upstate Dems. It's the exact problem that we've been suffering for a really, really long time. Yeah, we have a stout Democratic majority, but it is a very strong downstate majority.
The candidates responded to a question on food insecurity in a region that produces food.
Talking about farmers losing money and people needing food, again, I think that we can bridge that. I think we need to connect local food producers with jails and schools. What if Washington County Jail got all its dairy from Washington County farms? So right now, we have programs in our procurement policy that talk about, you know, minority women-owned businesses. Why can't we put something in place that says local New York products, right? So that our schools in New York State and our jails in New York State are providing food that's grown locally and make that connection. Not only are we supporting our farmers, we're also then giving access to fresh local food to people that are in the jails or to our students in school. We have farms right here. We have food. We have people that need it. We need to bridge that gap. So we need to support the farmers markets, the CSAs, make sure that New York State products are getting into places where the government, our tax dollars, are spending money on food anyway. Why not be spending it on New York State produced food?
And Boyajian had an interesting take on how we could reform the rules around SNAP benefits.
SNAP and WIC should be covering feminine hygiene products. Think about a young girl that can't afford her feminine hygiene products, her family's in poverty. You know what happens? She misses school. That is a pervasive problem. And that's something that I think if we all got loud on that as a fundamental part of our human rights, and that should be covered by SNAP and WIC, I think we could get that done quickly. I certainly will be supportive of that type of initiative at the state level.
Houtling and Boyajian responded to a question about government transparency and campaign finance reform.
we got to be aggressive in the capital of Albany, because it is a snake pit and it is accessible. And I take very strict pledges in terms of no corporate donations, but I'm going a step further. I'm creating a term limit on myself, and I think all members of the Assembly should be doing the same at this point. I believe the bottom of my gut in public service. I chose to live in upstate New York. If I'm going to live here, I want to make this place kick butt as much as possible. But I hope to do it in different capacities in my life, which is why I hope to do this job for 8 years at the maximum. And I won't do it any longer than that. If I haven't gotten things done for you in 8 years, I'm not in the right job. I'm not doing it. And I think more of our elected should take that pledge upon ourselves, because when we have new people, it brings in fresh ideas. That's why I'm so excited as a younger person getting involved in this. And when I go knock on doors all around the district and I see a young person at the door, I say, hey, it's our time. So you can count on two things from me. I will never accept a corporate PAC donation, and I will not serve for more than 8 years.
I'm also in support of term limits. I think that there was a sticker and it said, diapers and politicians are the same. They both need changing every once in a while for the same reason. So we need to make sure that our politicians aren't dirty. When I decided this was something I wanted to do, I wanted to be a public servant for all of you, I was told you need to raise $100,000, and my jaw probably dropped all the way to the ground, because I'm a blue-collar family. We don't make a lot of money. That's a lot of money, and it deters people from running. It deters people like you and I, the working class people of this district, from running. Because right now, you either need to be rich, or know a lot of rich people, or be for sale to a corporate PAC, to the NRA. And until we can get that money out of politics, we're not going to have the diverse perspectives that we need of all different socioeconomic statuses, all different genders, all different races. California recently passed a clean election reform that the government funds campaigns, and everybody gets the same amount. Imagine if we were on a level playing field. Imagine if every candidate had the same amount of money and couldn't accept money from anybody. They couldn't be beholden to anybody. That would be truly fair elections, where the best candidate would be elected because they're the best candidate, not because they have a lot of money or because they're rich.
I fully support doing publicly financed elections too, but we do need somebody that can beat an incumbent. I'm fortunate to have raised sufficient funds to actually get this job done. It's all great to stand for things, but if we don't get in the seat, we can never advocate. Now, the funds that we've raised, you know, I don't believe you have to know a bunch of rich people to get this done, because we raised more than enough money to get this done with an average donation of under $200. You might say, how could a 32-year-old do that? Well, remember that Armenian church I was at right before I came here? There also happens to be 3 million Armenians in the United States. So I've been fortunate to be able to raise money in small dollar donations from people in that circle, and that will stand the test of time, and you're not beholden to anybody. But at the end of the day, you need somebody that is going to be able to beat the Republican incumbent. And unfortunately, right now, in electoral politics, that requires having resources.
The candidates responded to a question on climate change.
Oh, brother, I'm going to need more than 2 minutes on this one. Now, look at all these flash floods we've been having. Does this seem normal to you? The consequences are all sorts of unpredictable things. One of the most magical rivers in the cold water fisheries in the United States is the Delaware River. Well, there was a flash flood there the other day. A train derailed right at the headwaters of it. It spilled 5,000 gallons of oil into the West Branch of the Delaware. That's an unforeseen impact of climate change. We have to get aggressive on this. And for my whole life, I've seen energy issues and environmental issues and climate change put on the back burner. We have more potential here for solar and wind and biofuel than we'd ever realized. But we gotta get the power producers and the utility lobbies out of the equation. And I think the only way you're gonna do that is by having somebody that's worked on it for a long time, that's shown the test of time.
Right now, we have a head of an EPA that does not believe in climate change. Think about that for a minute. Here in New York State, we have to protect ourselves from all of the rollbacks that are happening on a federal level. Every day, they're rolling something back. Now the car emission levels. California has fought back. California has said, no, we are not going with these new federal levels. We are going to pass legislation that says we are going with what the federal levels were, and we're going to continue on the path that Obama had put in place to make less and less emissions in the next 5 years. Right now, we need to establish a separate emissions regime like California and the 12 other states that follow its standards. We need to say, as New York State, we are not required to follow what you're doing on a federal level, because what they're doing is backwards. They're rolling back environmental protections. We need to be rolling in more environmental protections. As a mother, I'm very concerned about the planet that we're leaving for our children. We must invest in renewable energy and implement green energy initiatives. Any new money that we're spending in New York State has to be for renewables.
One of the last questions was on the SAFE Act and gun control.
One reason that I think that this seat has been held by a Republican for 28 years is because of guns. You see anti-SAFE Act signs all over the district. I knock on people's door, they say, "You're a Democrat? You're trying to take my guns." My husband is an avid hunter and sportsman. We are a responsible gun-owning family. So I can say to those unaffiliated and Republican voters, I'm not trying to take guns away from responsible gun-owning families, but I am looking to protect your children. I'm looking to make sure that your children are safe when they're in school. I think we can all agree that we don't need military assault.
Extra web streams. Besides the 24-hour broadcast of WGXC, there are extra web streams at wgxc.org for you to listen to, including Tuesday, August 21st, the Hudson Common Council meeting. Dan Udell usually webcast those with the WGXC app. That's at 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 21st. Then Thursday, August 23rd, Bobby Previtt's Blueprints performance is at Hilo in Catskill at 365 Main Street. WGXC webcasts all the shows at Hilo in Catskill, including Bobby Previtt's Blueprints show. This Thursday night, August 23rd, it should start around 8:30 p.m. Friday night, we have another live webcast from Hilo in Catskill, an extra web stream of Jeff Mercell performing. He's got a new solo record out, and he also plays with Mercury Rev. Tune in to the live webcast by clicking on the Listen Now button, wgxc.org, or any WGXC webpage, and scroll down to the bottom to find the Hilo webcast a little after 8 p.m., Friday, August 24th, with Jeff Mercell. There's another extra web stream Saturday, August 25th, from Hilo in Catskill. Stephen Carl and Handsome Animals and Darlin' Darlin' perform. Click on Listen Now at any WGXC webpage to find the web stream. Scroll down and you'll find the live web stream from Hilo in Catskill, Saturday, August 25th.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Here's a song from Jeff Mercell, formerly played with Mercury Rev and resides in the Hudson Valley. His first solo album, Lunascapes Volume 1, that includes some local folks you've heard, Jonathan Talbot on violin and viola, Jane Scarpatani on cello and others. This song is called Number 10 Series Lament from Jeff Mercell.
Thank you.
You've tuned in the WGXC News Update. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Albany Times-Union that a female attorney first demoted and later fired as a law clerk after accusing an acting state Supreme Court justice of sexual harassment is now suing, claiming there is a, quote, widespread culture of silence and retaliation in the state's judicial system. The lawsuit from Alexis Marquez is in U.S. District Court against acting state Supreme Court Justice Douglas Hoffman, the Manhattan judge she accused of harassment, and 16 other officials, including the state's chief administrative judge, Lawrence K. Marks, and the state's chief judge, Janet De Fiore, are also named in the suit. The suit claims Marks ignored her complaint against Hoffman and then deleted, quote, approximately half of the court system's statewide sexual harassment policy, unquote, last December, about 9 days later. But Lucien Chalfin, a spokesperson for the State Office of Court Administration, says, quote, our updating of the court system's sexual harassment policy had nothing to do with these allegations, unquote. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union. Richard Moody in Columbia Green Media reports that Columbia County is the latest local municipality doing less recycling. The Columbia County Solid Waste Department sent out a letter August 10th to town supervisors telling them that the department will further limit what they accept for recycling. Columbia County signed a new recycling contract August 1st with Casella Recycling. Quote, the new protocols are about the same as they were before, unquote, Columbia County Solid Waste Director Jolene Race said. Quote, we are trying to clean up the stream as much as possible to make the materials more marketable both domestically and internationally, unquote. Now, Casella won't take items with plastic coating or wax-coated paper. China, the country that had accepted the largest amount of recycling materials, won't take plastic or paper anymore. Now localities are reacting. Currently, Columbia County collects about 2,600 tons of paper, plastic, and glass each year, and Greene County picks up 3,000 tons of recyclable material. Quote, this is not just Columbia County, and it isn't just in New York. It's all over the U.S., unquote, Race said. Quote, everybody is starting to charge for recycling, unquote. Read the full story in Columbia Green Media. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that while Regal Cinemas 12 closed August 16th in the Hudson Valley Mall in Ulster County, a new multiplex theater chain will reopen in the space in January. Quote, all 12 auditoriums will feature luxury recliner chairs and assigned seating, in addition to state-of-the-art sound and projection systems, unquote, a press release from Neighborhood Cinema Group says. Neighborhood Cinema Group offers affordable movie tickets, free refills on popcorn and soda, select $5 movie tickets on Tuesdays, and a loyalty program for moviegoers, unquote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. I'm Tom Rowe. Find out more about all these stories at the newsroom at WGXC.org. Here's today's congressional campaign update. With news about Representative John Faso, Republican from Kinderhook, his Democratic opponent Antonio Delgado, the rest of the campaign for the New York's 19th Congressional District. This week, one election forecaster moved the 19th Congressional District election between Representative John Faso, Republican from Kinderhook, and Rhinebeck-based Democrat Antonio Delgado from Tilts Republican to toss-up, and another gave Delgado a slightly better chance to win November 6th. Inside Elections updated 32 contests this fall, mostly towards the Democrats, and now lists the Faso-Delgado election as a toss-up. The 538.com website released their U.S. House election forecast August 17th, and that lists Delgado with a 51.6% chance of winning, Faso with a 48.4% chance of winning another term. 538.com prediction currently forecasts Delgado with 48.2% of the vote, and Faso with 47.9% of the November vote. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Monday, a high near 76 and a low around 56. Tuesday, there's a 30% chance of showers after 2 p.m., with clouds increasing during the day and a high near 72. Tuesday night, prediction is for a 90% chance of rain, possibly thunderstorms, a low around 65. Wednesday, there's a 50% chance of rain with cloudy skies and a high near 76, low around 54. And Thursday should be sunny with a high near 72. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported creative community radio.
Here are some highlights from the WGXC program schedule for Monday, August 20th. At 9 a.m., Simon and Willie start the day with the WGXC morning show featuring music, talk, and community events. At noon, just after the local news, tune in for the Monday musical matinee presented by Lincoln Mayorga. At 3:30 p.m., Hudson residents Amelia, Mashuda, Fahim, and Emily discuss what they're reading and other literary topics on Bound by Books. At 4 p.m., Kieran Riley pilots the WGXC afternoon show with music, local news, events, and weather updates, plus an interview with new Lebanon town clerk Tistria Hotling about her run for the 107th State Assembly District in September's primary election. And at 7 p.m., J.D. Eisman takes you on an eclectic sonic tour of futuristic soul, cosmic-leaning roll, lost classics, body music, disco, punk, and more on his monthly show, The Spell. So keep your dial tuned to WGXC 90.7 FM or WGXC.org for all of these programs and more on Monday, August 20th.
Tune in to Transmission Art overnight Tuesday, August 21st with the Evidence-Based Fiction Network at 1 a.m. This episode is called The End of All Beginnings, Sine Wave Fairy Tales. Radio news comes back on at 5 a.m. overnight on Wave Farm's Standing Wave Radio and WGXC.
Oh, honey, I'm so glad you brought me up to Hudson, New York, so we could gamble about with the finches and the sparrow families.
Yeah, honey, I love coming up here on the weekends. You know, Sunday, September 16th, over there at Basilica Hudson, they're having one of them record fairs.
Oh, I can finally get my Pete Townsend cassette.
Yeah, I'm gonna get my Bette Midler bootlegs, probably, Sunday, September 16th at that Basilica Hudson.
Oh, is that place with all the lovely people and sculptures and Greenway?
Yeah, they got a Greenway down there. I like to sit on it and stare at the frogs gathering around my feet.
Oh, September 16th at Basilica Hudson, the WGXC Record Fair.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events. Monday, August 20th, the Greenville Town Board meets at 7 p.m. The public is encouraged to attend all local town meetings. And if you go to town meetings, take out your phone, make a recording, share it with your friends and neighbors. You can email info@wgxc.org to find out.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WGXC Acra, creative, community, magical radio.
I'm a roadrunner, honey.